Okay, so let's start. Thank you so much. It's great to see everybody here for our preamble. We technically start by the end of the week, but we figured we'd start off the week strong. This week we're the Sefer Devarim. Sefer Bamidbar is a sefer full of trying episodes, and Korach. Korach is one of those trying episodes. We know Korach caused this, started this revolution, this rebellion against the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen as well. And we just start off, it seems like out of nowhere, we start off with Vayikach Korach. Korach starts to ferment this revolution. So the question is like, why specifically now? Why did he decide now was the time to make his move? Korach was a smart man, he was a rich man, he was a smart man, probably a prophetic man, at least according to the Midrash. But why was it that he decided that now specifically was the time? Well, it can be a little interactive. Well, what do you think?
Because they just had the other problem with the Meraglim, so the people were unhappy with Moshe as it was, so maybe it was a good time to say, listen, he's misguiding us.
That's definitely born out by a pasuk. What were you saying? I'm sorry, remind me your name?
Yaakov. But
the blood in the water, the sharks will come, right? The blood in the water, the sharks are going to come, and that's it, you know? And he even makes that point. He says that you didn't bring us to the land flowing with milk and honey. You know? What else? What else did you see?
The beam, it's a little embarrassing. What was done to them. Yeah. Kaken, the cake over there. Yeah.
Wasn't happy with
the haircut.
It was, there's also the problem with the birth order. He felt like he was next in line. The Midrash famously brings two complaints also that Korach had. One is based on what we call a smichas aparshios. Smichas aparshios, the juxtaposition of different areas in the Torah. Right? So we just ended with tzitzis, so it would make sense that a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when he's dictating the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, look, tzitzis is the end of Shlach, and Korach is the beginning of Korach. So maybe there's an issue that Korach thought he had a great taina. And Midrash Tanchuma, Rashi quotes, says that he got everybody together and says, I don't understand. If I bring an entire, you tell me I need one string of tchelas, but if I have an entire talesim full of tchelas, what's the good of one string? Maral makes a comparison. And says that it wasn't just a good question. He tried to stump the Rebbe. That the question was symbolic, because the rest of Korach's taina was, his complaint was, well, everybody's holy. What do we need? What do we need a representative? What do we need a kohen for? What do we need Moshe Rabbeinu for? We all heard Anochi. Similarly, the question of mezuzah. Mezuzah is the same question, the Midrash Tanchuma says. If I have a house full of svarim, what do I need another little sefer outside to do that job?
I got a question.
Yes.
We always say that the Torah is not in order. Was this in order?
Right, so this is a famous machlokas, Rashi and the Ramban. Both actually borne out by the Gemaras, but Rashi and the Ramban are two champions of these concepts. Rashi is always saying it's not in order, and Ramban is saying, except for like one time where he's painted into a corner, it's always in order. Because the Ramban's entire view, his entire shita, is that the Torah has to be in order. Specifically, because the Ramban says that in his introduction that the Torah is all the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and whatever the episodes that happened in that way spelled out a certain permutation of permutation the way it is, and therefore it needs to be lined up like that. The Ramban is very much, no, the Torah is specifically in order. Rashi is like, the Torah is almost never in order. Rashi would say, though, it would seem that this was in order because that they're together. It's indicative that that the tzitzis and the tzitzis were a part of the problem that brought Korach here. Right, so, and these are all very, very true. There's one more layer which I wanted to add to our discussion, that this is not an isolated incident. That the Torah has these great prophecies that sort of move a lot of the action of, like we zoom in and we zoom out. So where we have these pictures of the zooming in and out of the storyline, we have the micro level, which is a lot of times what we've concentrated in our schooling. And then we go zoom out to the macro level. There are great undercurrents that are happening as well. Not just micro level, but also the big picture. And sometimes because we get so fixated on what's the pshat in this pasuk, we forget to see that in the grander strokes, that there's a bigger picture, a zoom out to the stories in Chumash and Tanakh as well. And one of these big stories is the Bris Ben Bessarim, right? From Bereishis and Shmos, the entire story is carried forth by this underlying nevuah, this underlying plot, which is moving us. Starts with Lechacha, and from Lechacha till Vayechi, really till the end of Pekudei, the entire story has been driven by this one nevuah that Avram Avinu had. Even to the extent that Yosef and the brothers is all part of this unfolding, wild, huge plot story of the Bris Ben Bessarim, that Hashem says you're going to go down to Mitzrayim and you're going to come up. Right? You're going
to
go down.
Yosef said that to the brothers. It wasn't your fault. God wanted me.
Precisely. That's it wasn't him just being religious. They was like, oh, Baruch Hashem. No, because there was this great prophecy which was unfolding. And there's a second great prophecy also. The second great prophecy which underlies this all of Sefer Devarim is the prophecy of it. It sounds like these two like minor characters, right? There are these two characters in Baal Otzcha that were sort of, they seem to be like a little footnote. We don't spend that much time about it. It's Eldad and Medad. Eldad and Medad are these two characters that in the Pesukim of the Torah, it seems they don't even have a speaking part. All we know is that they're prophesying, right? What happened is, Moshe Rabbeinu has said, "Oh, now they want chicken. They want chicken. They want fleishigs. What are we supposed to do? How am I supposed to find food for all these people? I can't. Kesh Baruch Hu, I'm supposed to carry them and feed each one of them what they need. Like I should carry them like a parent, like a nursing mother. I should carry an entire nation. I can't do this." So Hashem says, "You know what? Okay, fine. Go and get me 70 people." Get me 70 Zakenim and they're going to help you. 70 elders, they will help you out. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, well, wait a second, we have 12 tribes, and 12 doesn't go into 70 very well. So it's going to have to be that two of the tribes are going to be underrepresented, because 72 times 6 is... 72 times...
12.
Divided by... 72 divided by 6 is 12, but... But you told me 70. So I'm going to have remainder 2.
I read the Russian, and I don't remember what it said.
Right, so remainder 2. So how do we do remainder 2? Well, it seems to work all the time to make a goral, to make a lottery. So we'll do it also. There were two, because nobody would willingly have less representation in their council of elders. Should be even Stephen. So what they did was they drew this lottery, and there would be two who would be left out. And Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need your service. Thank you so much for volunteering. Thank you so much for volunteering. So
they ended up living, those two guys.
That's right. So those two guys were Eldad and Medad, and everybody else went out to the council of Moshe Rabbeinu. They all prophesied. These two guys who weren't accepted, all of a sudden they start prophesying in the camp. What was their prophecy? It's a several way machlokus in the Gemara, but for our discussion, we're going to zoom into one of these prophecies. Moshe Rabbeinu will die, and Yehoshua will bring us in.
And Yehoshua wanted to kill him for it.
Right? He said, "Shut them up, kill them, put them in prison. Stop that! Right? Stop that! Stop that! No!" And that's why, specifically, by the way, that's our hint to the nevuah. Because why does Yeshua care so much? Because it's about him. So I don't want to do this. And you see what the nature of the leadership of Yeshua is that he's saying, look, I'll do it if I need to, but I don't want this gedul. I don't want this greatness. No, stop them. And Moshe Rabbeinu is like, Yeshua, you're zealous and jealous for me. It's okay. Halavai, everybody should be a Navi. But from that moment, I've seen it in two Sfarim already, this is what ferments so much of the trials and tribulations of Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar, right? So from Baloscha, we go then into the trouble with the Meraglim. The trouble with the Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu benches, he blesses Yeshua and says, you shouldn't fall in with the Meraglim. This is Yeshua, his biggest Talmud. He knows he's pretty spiritually fortified against the ferment of the Meraglim. He's not gonna fall in with him. What are you talking about? The Meraglim's entire plan was to be able to not go into Eretz Yisrael so that prophecy wouldn't happen, so to be able to keep Moshe Rabbeinu around. They wanted to stop us from being able to go into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to be an impediment to it and stop it from happening so that Moshe Rabbeinu would live.
Stay in the desert indefinitely?
They'll stay there indefinitely, not go into Eretz Yisrael.
Well, also, in the desert, they were all holy. They didn't have this. Once they went into Eretz Yisrael, they lost their...
They would have to go. So a lot of Midrashim bear this out, that... Why? Because v'yasafta deganecha. You'd have to go out and gather your grain. Nobody's dropping mun on you. You'd have to go and go sell things. You have to go look at cryptocurrencies. You have to manage stock trades and write contracts and go be involved. The idea of coming into Eretz Yisrael meant all of a sudden that the spiritual and the physical are going to combine together, where the midbar experience was a totally spiritual oasis. They didn't want that to end. So the way that Cook and others say was as part of their plan was, let's stay here with Moshe Rabbeinu. Why do we have to do this? So that's one reason that Yeshua was in on this. Why am I davening for Yeshua? Because Yeshua is the most. I don't want to have to do all this. And the next step then comes to Korach. Korach says, I know about this great prophecy also. Right? This great prophecy also. I know Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die. And guess what? I'm next in line. So if Moshe and Aaron are going to die, so then let's make it happen already. Forget about it. Your son is set already, Moshe Rabbeinu. Aaron, your son is set also. It's me now. What was it in that Disney movie, Lion King? The time has come. Oh, be prepared. Be prepared, right? The singing hyenas and stuff. My time has come. The son of Korach now is rising. Look, I'm here. I should be the person. If you look at the Rashi later on where he says, why did he think he could do this? Because he sees that normally, if it's going to be one person out of the 250 people who are going to do this trial by fire of Ketores, everyone's going to die. We already learned about Nadav and Avihu. You don't mess around with Ketores. That's one of the important rules in life that we learn from Tanakh. Don't mess around with Ketores. It's a bad idea. Korach is like, he was a smart guy. Why would he think that he's going to come out okay? He's going to emerge unscathed from the trial by Ketores. Because he had a prophecy. He saw that Shmuel is his descendant. He saw that and Shmuel's descendants is going to be always Levim, and they were going to have access to Ruach HaKodesh, access to prophecy and divine inspiration. So he said, clearly I make it out of this. You know what happened. But that was the idea, what was behind Korach. The same prophecy, the same plot line is what's going through Sefer Bamidbar now, trying to fight with this, interact with this Nevuah. Part of the problem, though, is, his great prophecies is kind of hard to see how they're going to come together. How is it exactly going to play out? So let me just end with one thought from Rav Soloveitchik in terms of dealing then with fate and destiny, which is one thing that the Rav dealt with a lot as well. This great prophecy sort of overshadows Sefer Bamidbar. So how do we know, like, exactly what to do? Because the spies read it wrong the one way, and Korach read it wrong in the other direction. So Soloveitchik explained the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in such an unbelievable way. The Rav was very, very fond of dichotomies, dualisms, dialectics as part of his brisker upbringing, but then applying it to everything else. The Mishnah says, Bal korchach ata chai, u'bal korchach ata meis. You live against your will and you die against your will. He says this represents two specific viewpoints of the world. A person who feels compelled by fate, by seeing that they have no choice and they're being dragged along by a grand prophecy, as it were. Bal korchach ata chai. You're living against your will. Every moment is suffering when you feel, I have no choice in the world. Rather, a person needs to adopt the view of Bal korchach ata meis, that I'm moving towards my destiny, even though sometimes I don't completely understand it. Moshe Rabbeinu will die and Yeshua will bring us in. And people are fighting with it. You think you can fight against the Nevuah at Meraglim? It's not going to happen. And you think you're going to fight about it, every moment of life is going to be suffering. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be painful. Marshall Linehan, the great psychologist and researcher and clinician, said that to a certain extent, she says, acceptance is the only pathway out of hell. Pain becomes suffering without acceptance. Yeshua will lead us in. Moshe Rabbeinu will die. Our failure to accept this in the right way is what causes all the pain in the midbar. However, Bal korchach ata meis, like Rabbi Yisrael Salanta used to say, as long as the candle burns, there's still time. There's still time to perform. Yes, we know that there's this prophecy. Yes, we know that Yeshua is going to bring us in. How's that going to work out? We don't know. Our job is just to put one foot in front of the other. Later, towards the end of the Sefer, Moshe Rabbeinu has to tell the Bnei Yisrael, you have to go to war against Midian. What do you mean? They just attacked us. They just set their spies against us. They tried to seduce us. What do you mean we have to go out and fight? Because again, they were trying to fight with the prophecy. The next generation, is already the generation of the desert ended, but it's just that maybe we can hold on to Moshe Rabbeinu just a little bit longer. Moshe Rabbeinu said, not your job to start getting in the middle with Nevuah. Not your job to start fighting with Ashkacha too much. Your job is to put one foot in front of the other. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. My job is to do the best I can. And this is a perspective we can take to us for the rest of the week. As we're thinking and as we're doing, our job is to do the best we can with the hand that we're given. There's tough situations that we're dealt with sometimes. Our job and how we rise above is acceptance and putting one foot in front of the other, doing the best we can. That's all we can be asked to do. May we merit to be able to internalize this message of the great prophecy that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Our job is to do the best we can. Sometimes there are things we're not happy about, but the more we try to fight with that point, and as opposed to trying to make the world better, the more we try, where it's going to bring us down. The more we try to pick ourselves up, the bigger and better things will be. Shkayach, thank you.